Welcome you to the Word of Life. Today on the Word of Life, we're going to continue a study we began last Lord's Day talking about doubt and struggle in faith. And we'll be studying in John chapter 20, if you want to be turning to John chapter 20, the Gospel of John. I appreciate always the involvement that you have in talking to me about the lessons. We've got some feedback from various people at certain times about statements made, questions asked, things like this. This series of lessons is a result of several statements made about wanting to delve a little deeper into the reasonableness of faith, if you will. This involves questions which we started to answer last week, remember out of Matthew chapter 28, about the presence of doubt in the heart of a disciple. Does the presence of doubt negate faith? Does it make you an invalid disciple? That's the questions that we were asking. I want you to understand that what makes faith valid is the object of faith and the awareness that you have of your need to submit to that object of faith. You see, what I mean is that the very strongest faith in the world, a rock-solid faith in a God that doesn't exist, would be absolutely meaningless. The weakest faith, the stumbling, struggling, I want to believe, but I don't see it yet, faith in the right God has the power to change who you are. And I want you again to understand very clearly that doubt in your heart does not make you to be invalid in your following of Christ. Doubt is the beginning. What we left off at the end of the show last Lord's Day was that doubt is the beginning of the growth of faith. A doubt that is unanswered means that you have died mentally as far as faith goes. In other words, if you have a doubt, a struggle, a question, and you just say, well, I'm going to push it aside and I'm going to play like it doesn't exist, then you're not doing what honors God. You see, God is big enough for your questions. God is big enough to answer the questions. The marvelous book that I hold in my hands today as we speak, that you hold in your hands, I hope, as we're studying here today, that you study on a regular basis, this marvelous book that we call the Bible, is a book that raises more questions and causes more people to study than any other one book that I know of. Now, that's my statement. I'm sure that you could go somewhere and find somebody that would disagree with that. But the issues that this book deals with and the life that this book deals with is where I live. And by the way, it's where you live too. Does doubt make you an invalid disciple? In Matthew 26, we answered that question with the presence of the disciples with Jesus. They had gone in verse 16 of Matthew 28 to a mountain that Jesus had designated in the district of Galilee. They saw him, they worshiped him, but some were doubtful. verse 17 says. If you understand what that means, it means that in the midst of worship, there was a struggle to believe. Did Jesus open up his remarks by simply saying, "Well, if you have any doubt, just get on out of here. I don't need you." He did not say that. Instead, there is something very down to earth, so to speak, about what Jesus went on to say. He did not concern himself at that point with the doubt that was there, but with the commission that had to be. In the Gospel of John in chapter 20, we see a story that illustrates this, perhaps from another angle. And we're going to address this in the story of the day of the resurrection, an event that took place, and there was an absentee. And a week later, when the absentee and his questions were answered. In John chapter 20, we begin reading at verse 19. Jesus is resurrected in the first part of John 20. He has been buried in the tomb. The stone has been rolled away. The angel has appeared. The resurrection has taken place. We go to verse 19, and it's later in the same day. When it was evening, verse 19 says, on that day, the first day of the week, when the doors were shut where the disciples were for fear of the Jews, Jesus came and stood in their midst and said to them, "Peace be with you." When he had said this, he showed them both his hands and his side. The disciples therefore rejoiced when they saw the Lord. Jesus therefore said to them again, "Peace be with you. As the Father has sent me, I also send you." And when he had said this, he breathed on them and said to them, "Receive the Holy Spirit. If you forgive the sins of any, their sins have been forgiven them. If you retain the sins of any, they have been retained." But Thomas, now listen to verse 24. But Thomas, one of the 12 called Didymus, was not with them when Jesus came. We look at this story and we remind ourselves that for centuries, this poor fellow, Thomas, the twin, that's what Didymus means. Thomas has been called Doubting Thomas. You know, that's said in derision by a lot of people, but quite honestly, would you put yourself in the place of Thomas? Would you see yourself standing there in that place? You're not there when this happens. And listen to what happens next. You're challenged. And what would you do with the challenge? Listen to the text. Beginning at verse 25 in John chapter 20, we read these words. The other disciples, therefore, were saying to Thomas, "We have seen the Lord." But Thomas said to them, "Unless I shall see in his hands the imprint of the nails, and put my finger in the place of the nails, and put my hand into his side, I will not believe." And after 8 days, again, his disciples were inside, and Thomas was with them. Jesus came, the doors having been shut, and stood in their midst and said, "Peace be with you." Then he said to Thomas, now if you've never been in an uncomfortable position, Thomas, right here, is in an uncomfortable position. Listen, he said to Thomas, "Reach here your finger and see my hands. Reach here your hand and put it into my side, and do not be unbelieving, but believing." Thomas answered and said to him, "My Lord and my God." And Jesus said to him in verse 29, "Because you have seen me, have you believed? Blessed are they who did not see and yet believed." Now I want to address something very quickly and make sure that you understand that in verse 29, where Jesus says, "Blessed are they who did not see and yet believed," he's not talking about the other 10. They saw Jesus a week before, and they believed. Thomas did not see until a week later, and now he believes. Our question is going to be, who is Jesus talking about in the end of verse 29? I want to address what happened that day first, though. Thomas was not there when Jesus appeared. Why would he not believe? You remember when we asked that question last week of those that were doubtful in Matthew 28? I understand why Thomas didn't believe. It's too good to be true that Jesus would be alive again. It's too good to be true that he had appeared to those others. And Thomas didn't want to be set up for a disappointment again. You ever been disappointed in something? You expected something to occur, and it didn't, and it just upset your whole world. Just imagine. They thought Jesus was the king, but the king died, and they didn't understand. What they saw as the greatest defeat was actually the greatest victory for God, but they didn't know that. And now Thomas doesn't want to be hurt again until Jesus comes and looks at him. And can you imagine that Thomas didn't notice anybody else in the world but the eyes of Jesus upon him? As Jesus said, "Feel where the nails were. Put your hand into my side. Let go of unbelief." The scripture doesn't tell us if Thomas did either one. It does tell us that he bowed before Jesus in worship and said, "My Lord and my God." In a few moments, we'll answer the question at the end of verse 29, "Who are those who did not see and believed?" Right now, let's listen to a song. Now, we know from what verse 29 says that the first phrase of Jesus' statement, "Because you have seen me, have you believed," is referring to Thomas. Who does Jesus address? "And blessed are they who did not see and yet believed." First, I want to say something that we realize from this statement, that there is an expectation on Jesus' part that it is not necessary to see with our eyes to believe. Jesus knows that's true, because his statement is, "Blessed are those who do not see, they who did not see, and yet believed." I want you to understand that that's what Jesus understands. Now, to answer that question, we go to the next two verses. You see, as John writes this gospel, if we understand how the events of the New Testament fall. This would be in the third quarter of that first century. That is probably somewhere from 75 to 85 AD. A lot of the people that had seen Jesus, that had witnessed him, were gone. In fact, maybe by this time, the majority of people that had seen Jesus were gone. John writes as an eyewitness. You see, with John, it wasn't a question of faith. It was a question of sight. He had seen Jesus resurrected. It was not that he was asked to believe what he did not see. But the people that John is writing to were in a different position. They were not eyewitnesses. When Jesus said these words, listen to what John continued to write. Look at verse 30 and verse 31 of John chapter 20. You've heard these verses before, but maybe you've never thought about them in the specific context they are said. Let's read the end of verse 29 and go into these two verses. Blessed are they who did not see and yet believed. Many other signs, therefore, Jesus also performed in the presence of the disciples, which are not written in this book, but these have been written that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that believing you may have life in his name. Listen to those words. Did you catch what happened? Jesus makes the statement that there are those who will not see who must believe. And then John says, my friends, let me tell you why I wrote this gospel. These are written that you may believe. You see, the people that read the gospel of John in his day were by and large in the same boat that you and I are in. I've never seen Jesus. There's been great controversy of late as to just exactly how Jesus looked. I've seen some things online that purport to show us how Jesus looked. I never saw Jesus like that. And there's every chance in the world that he wasn't looking like me. I understand that. I never believed that he did. I never believed those artist renditions of Jesus. But let me tell you something. You and I stand together, and that we were not alive when Jesus was alive here on earth. We are alive now when Jesus is alive. But when Jesus came to earth and came in flesh, as John chapter 1 talks about, when he came here, you were not here and I was not here. Now Thomas, the apostles, John that wrote this gospel, they saw Jesus. I said a while ago, and I want you to realize, it was not a matter of faith for them. It was a matter of sight. They saw him. So the remark that Jesus makes at the end of verse 29 becomes essential for me and my faith in God, and essential for you and your faith in God. Blessed are they who did not see and yet have believed. The gospel in writing here that the Apostle John wrote was written for a very specific purpose: to allow belief in the Son of God and the resulting life that comes from that belief. We are those who did not see and yet believe. Now the question, as we framed it last Lord's Day, is this. Is the belief that we have simply a decision against all odds to believe, a blind faith, a leap of faith, as some people say, or is there more to it than that? Does God allow that there is more to it than that? I want to give you an answer. I don't usually do this way. I want to give you an answer, and then we're going to study for a while to show how this might be. The answer is that God does not provide for a faith that's not based on evidence. God does not intend for us to believe with a vacuum of evidence supporting the belief that we hold. It is not merely a, let's see, let's make a choice, flip the coin and see whether I believe or I don't believe kind of question. God has placed enough evidence here that we can reasonably believe, but not so much evidence that we lose our choice. If God wrote in the sky with his ID, his picture, "I'm here, you can't refuse belief," it wouldn't be a matter of faith. It would be sight. But you see, that's not what God's asking us for. God is not asking us to do what we cannot do. He is not asking us to have sight as the basis of our faith. But he is offering evidence for the basis of faith. We mentioned last Lord's Day how our courtrooms work. Evidence is presented. Juries, judges make decisions based upon the evidence presented. I ask you to do nothing more or less than that with God. In a few moments, we'll address that again. Right now, let's listen to a song. So what have I asked you to do today and last Lord's Day? I've asked you to be willing to examine evidence. I've asked you to be willing to listen to eyewitness statements, is what we're going to talk about in the ensuing lessons. I've asked you to be willing to consider that perhaps what you have accepted is not true. There are so many people today that go to cable news networks for their understanding of Jesus, what's presented. Various things like that. There are many people today who listen to pastors and priests talk and make their decisions based upon what those people say. There are many people today who attribute their faith to their parents, to their grandparents, and hold their faith because of that. I'm asking you to do none of those things. I don't want you to disregard your parents, your grandparents, the people that have been good in your life. You can never have enough good people in your life. But I'm asking you to take faith beyond that. You see, faith in my parents leads to a parental faith that at best is limited by their own understanding. Faith in a preacher or a priest would do the same thing in relation to them. I'm not asking you to have faith in what someone says, but faith in what God says. The basis for the belief that I now hold is compared to the belief that I held 40 or 45 years ago is very different. When I was growing up, my parents were involved in the congregation. My siblings attended there. People in my family were members there. Friends that I had were members there. And that was the circle of faith that I had. And for years, that was the reason for my faith. Because they held that understanding, I held that understanding. When I left home, I began to question things. And I began to ask myself some pretty hard questions. And I don't mind telling you that there were times that I struggled to find the answers for what I was seeking. And there were times that I laid the struggle aside, that I just got tired of it and thought, I don't know if it's worth it. I don't know if it's something that I'll ever obtain, a real, authentic faith. God kept drawing me back. He kept pushing me back in the events of my life and the people that were around me and the various things that happened to cause me to begin to answer those questions. And as I began to answer questions, quite honestly, inside me an excitement grew that I might find something real, that I might find something more than what I had found before. And I did. That's not always the end of the journey for people. Some people begin this journey and drop it, just decide that it's not worth it, and they go another way. Well, that wasn't me. I've wound up in a very different place than I thought I would be. And I don't claim that I have all the answers. I've said that before. And I want you to very clearly understand that I am not saying that I haven't answered every question I ever had. There are some things I struggle with now. But I've come to the understanding from Matthew 27 or 28 and John chapter 20 that it is the process that I'm going through that is my faithfulness to God. It is my acceptance of what I understand leading to my acceptance of what I don't understand. It is a battle that continues. And I still raise questions that give me a headache, and I think to myself, why did I ever raise that question? Well, the reason is because doubt, questions, are the beginning of real faith. I hope I don't disappoint you in this series. I hope that what I say honors and glorifies God. But I hope that you'll take up the battle. You keep joining us here on the Word of Life. We'll continue walking down this road, and we will look for those answers together. Maybe not always finding them quick, but we'll get there.